Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The shooting of two NYPD officers last Thursday in the stairwell of a public housing project in the Bronx comes at a tense moment. A jury is expected to start deliberating tomorrow in the murder case of Akai Gurley, an unarmed black man who was shot dead by a police officer in another public housing stairwell in November of 2014. These two cases highlight what seems to be one consistent fact. Stairwells in many public housing projects are disproportionately unsafe places. And since the death of Akai Gurley, residents say little has been done to actually improve conditions at the pink houses in East New York where Gurley was killed. So why not? And what ought to be done to make sure that nobody, whether they're unarmed residents or police officers on patrol, gets hurt in the stairwells? Here to discuss is Richard Aborn, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, an independent organization focused on criminal justice reform in New York City. Richard, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thank you, Brian. Always happy to be with you.
And listeners, if you live in or frequently visit one of the city's 300 or so public housing units, what's the state of your stairwells? Are they safe? Excuse me, do you welcome these vertical patrols, as they're called, by NYPD officers, or do you want them to stop? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. So, Richard, at the Melrose Houses in the Bronx, where a 23-year-old named Malik Chavez recently shot two cops before tragically turning the gun on himself, that's the Thursday incident, the stairwells, we read, were properly lit, unlike in the Akai Gurley incident. But there were cigarette butts and drug residue and empty beer bottles lying about. Is that representative of many NYCHA stairwells?
Well, I think you get a very broad mix. Some stairwells are in decent shape. Some stairwells are not. I can't say which is the predominant influence. But I can say, and history now shows this, that patrolling stairwells is obviously a very dangerous occupation for the cops. They have to do it. People are entitled to live in a safe, secure environment in NYCHA housing, in any of our developments. And obviously, criminal activity takes place in the stairwells. And it's not hard to understand why. They're enclosed spaces with very little external view into them. You can secrete your activities quite easily. They're a place to hide. They're a place to do drug transactions. Or they're a place to hang out. So it's a real problem for the department. But I think they have to do the vertical patrols.
You have both sides in the Gurley case complaining about conditions
right.
in the stairwell. You have Kimberly
right.
Ballinger, who was Akai Gurley's domestic partner, suing the housing authority for sustaining trap-like conditions, as she calls it, in the pink houses, which she says contributed to Gurley's death. And you've heard the defense for Officer Peter Lang, who shot Gurley, his defense arguing that the dangerous nature of vertical patrols, meaning stairwell patrols, is the reason he had his gun drawn. So let's take each of these. First, how common is it for police officers to have their guns out while they're doing these vertical stairway patrols?
Let me take these in reverse.
Sure.
The two thoughts you just articulated, that the stairwell was dirty and dangerous and the officer having his gun out, are not inconsistent thoughts, right? There actually is a consistency to that. I don't know how often they take their guns out. I don't know that there's a departmental policy on it. I suspect it's an individual decision made based on their awareness of the conditions in the building. So you probably have some officers with their guns out, some with not. More experienced officers may not, less experienced may. I don't know that there's any common thread to when the gun is out. I do suspect it's based on understanding of the conditions. But the greater point is
there,
let me
jump in on that point for
sure,
a minute.
Sure,
is
sure,
there
sure.
NYPD policy on this? Are cops allowed to patrol with their guns drawn? And in your opinion, as somebody who's been a DA and studies crime policy, should they be allowed to patrol with their guns drawn if there's not reason to think that there's a particular suspect who's dangerous at that moment?
So to the first question, is there a NYPD policy? The answer is I don't know. I don't know if there's a policy on it or not. To the question of whether or not they should be allowed to do it, I think it's just like being in the street. I think they should be allowed to make the decision they think they need to make in order to protect themselves, the citizenry, and their partners. If they're in a very dangerous situation, then, of course, they need to take their gun out. If they're not, they shouldn't. So I think it'd be very hard to have a common policy for every situation. Mm-hmm. But, again, I don't know if the department has a policy on it or not.
Okay. And you were going to make a larger point.
But the larger point is, I think, the obvious one, which is, and in fact, it'd be great to hear, even on this show, from some housing development residents, how do we make these stairwells safer? They're a reoccurring problem year after year. We have problems with these stairwells. Do we need CCTV in there? Do we need them monitored more frequently? Do you need a tenant patrol in there? Maybe the tenants can help with this. Do you need more frequent police patrol? I mean, there are lots of things that can be done, but clearly the basic things have to be done. The front doors to the building need to be secured. The building needs to know who's getting access to the building. The stairwells have to be well lit. There has to be visibility into the stairwells. Maybe, I don't know the physical layout of each stairwell, but maybe there needs to be more exterior light, more exterior view into the stairwells. I mean, there are lots of things one can do, what's called environmentally, in other words, changing the environment to decrease crime. We used to have a saying in crime prevention called a bricks and mortar approach to crime prevention. And what that meant was using environmental design to lower crime rates. And that probably can be applied here as well.
You wanted to hear from some people living in public housing to talk about the stairwell. So do I, and we have some on the line. And listeners, you may join, too. Any public housing residents who have a comment on the general danger of the stairwells in your particular building, and obviously every building, every development is going to be different. So how about for yours? And do you appreciate the fact that there are vertical patrols on a regular basis by police officers, or do you think after the Akai Gurley case that you would rather see them back off? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Lou in Harlem. Lou, you're on WNYC. Thank you very much for calling in.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for picking my call. I live in Harlem in public housing also. But my problem really with the Akai Gurley case is this. When you are in a car accident, it is not necessarily a crime if you stay on the scene. When you leave the scene of the accident, that's when it becomes a crime. The police officer shoots this young man. Rather than calling for first aid, he's arguing with his partner as to whether or not to call the union rep or to call his sergeant. What kind of police training is that? That is what my problem is.
Lou, I hear you on the case. How about the stairwells in your building?
Well, the stairwells are catch 22. They are enclosed buildings. Most of the people don't have anywhere really to hang out or to chat or to just stand or stuff like that. That account is a catch 22. But my thing is, as a trained police officer, in this instance, you call for first aid. That's what the crime is.
Lou, thank you very much. And that's a major piece of the case. Of Officer Peter Lang, which is going to go to the jury tomorrow. Right, Richard?
Yeah, that's correct. And frankly, I'd rather not comment on that because it is going to the jury tomorrow. But Lou's other point is exactly what I was saying before. We need to think about the physical construction of these places. And is there something in that construction that's driving people into the stairwell? And is one of the alternatives simply providing more common space? You know, kids need a place to go and hang out, right? Kids like to hang out. Maybe we should be figuring out a way to give them those places that are safer and more open in NYCHA housing developments. There's lots of what are called community rooms and common space. We need to make sure those are open at all times, that it's safe to get there, that there's not some gang issue in actually getting there. But we need to get ahead of these issues. We need to prevent them. We are at the Crime Commission. We focus on prevention. We need to prevent these by thinking in advance about why these sorts of events occur and then doing whatever we can to mitigate the danger and encourage safer activity.
By the way, we looked up the guns drawn policy, and the Times puts it this way. The police department allows officers on vertical patrols to use their discretion in drawing their weapon, a policy that has not been changed since Mr. Gurley was killed. Francois in East Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling with regards to a building that my mother actually lives in East Harlem, and I visit her from time to time, and I've noticed that in the past, about 2 years ago, I believe, there used to be a more there was a police presence involved where they would have, rookies in the hallways or whatever, just kind of looking over everything. And now when I came back, there's none of that. So under the Blasio administration, it seems like all of those police patrol units have disappeared. There used to be cop cars on the corners and this and that. So I was wondering if your guest would have any kind of lead on why that is. Is it like a budget thing, or are they just kind of weaning back from a certain developments? So that's my question, because honestly, her staircase is full of feces, urine, and people dealing drugs, and I have seen it myself.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's just unacceptable that in our city there are people living in public housing developments that are subject to those sorts of circumstances. So
I agree.
If I may suggest to the caller a couple of things. I don't know which building you're talking about, and police allocation depends on crime rates, so there may be some shift in the crime rates. You'd have to look into that. But more importantly, and frankly more urgently, I would, as you hang up, I would call 311 and report this. I would call NYCHA and report it. I would call your city council member and report it. And maybe in some ways, most importantly, I don't know which precinct you're talking about, but I would call the precinct. The NYPD has done something very smart, and you may not like this at the moment because you're not seeing it, but they've adopted a new plan called neighborhood policing. Not even community policing, neighborhood policing. That is assigning officers to smaller geographic units to work on very, very local issues that are brought to their attention either by the neighborhood leadership or by people that live in the neighborhood. This is the quintessential example of why those cops are there. So I would just get on the phone right away and get some people in there. Again, call NYCHA, your city council member, 311, and the precinct, and you'll get some action.
And, Francois, if you do that, report back to us and tell us how government worked for you. Did you get the action that you were looking for? Richard thinks you will. Call us back, in a couple of weeks maybe, after they have some time to respond, and tell us if anything happened. Anthony in Queens, I think, is going to describe a similar condition elsewhere in the city. Anthony, you're on WNYC. Hello. Anthony, you there?
Hello?
Hi, Anthony. Is that you?
Yeah, hi. How you doing? I just want to let you know that I'm EMT and I work in the 9/11 service.
Yes, sir.
What I want to mention about the housing project is that sometimes when we respond to the housing project, a lot of times in the wintertime, a lot of people gather in the stairwells. And when they gather in the stairwells, sometimes they, they hang around, smoke pot, and, this is their place to hang around. So a lot of times you'll find people in the stairwells that really shouldn't be there. But I'm sure with these patrols that the officers have, that they may find it difficult to remove these people because a lot of them live right there in the same building.
Right. Well, if it's just people being in the stairwells, because, people live in small apartments, it's crowded, maybe the stairwells is going, people do this in high-rise college dorms, I've seen it. But that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to be drugs or feces there. And when you find those things, or if they're dangerous and people are getting mugged in those stairwells, are you seeing that when you go around as an EMT?
Well, what usually happens sometimes, and this is not an uncommon occurrence, the elevators will be broken, and then you will have to take the staircase. And then when these people, whoever are hanging around there, sometimes involved in trying to do some kind of criminal element, they sometimes break the lights purposely to be in the dark and to try to assault whatever. I can tell you that responding on an ambulance call on several occasions, when I walk into the stairwell, I'm surprised that there's people there, and they're shocked that I even walk in the door. And it's sort of like a scary moment, but as long as they see who you are, sometimes they don't bother you. But, it's kind of scary sometimes. It's the same for the police.
Anthony, thank you very much. John in East New York on the Gurley case. John, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yes, in relationship to this concept that you should allow police officers' subjective take on a dangerous situation to be the defining essence of why he shot his gun. There are so many cops walking out here with 1 year on the job. How many years did this cop have on the job? Not only that, not only did this cop have his gun out, he had his finger on the trigger. And every training for the New York City Police Department say the only time you put your finger on the trigger is when you're getting ready to fire your weapon, when you have made that determination that you need to kill somebody. So therefore, there are two things. And another thing, this idea that the projects, this and that, all of a sudden, we have, these conditions have existed in the projects for years and years and years and years. The elevators don't work. You're forced to take the stairwell. The reality of, and policy changes. They have a policy at the New York State Parole Board. It says if you get parole, you can't live in the projects where all the poor people are shuttled. So the poorest of the poor live in the projects. The poorest of the poor commit crime disproportionately since the beginning of time all over the world. So now you have all of these parolees living in the projects. The parole board is winking and nodding at this policy to say they can't live there because they have nowhere else to live. They were born there. They were raised there. So you get a kid in the stairway, all parolees, selling marijuana, which is a misdemeanor for anybody else. But cop walks on him. Uh-oh. He's looking at the fact that he's going to get violated. He may be on life parole.
Right.
So and you have a policy that says he can't live there, but he's living there.
In
so
fact, John, we did a separate segment just the other week on that exact expulsion policy for people when they come back from prison to their public housing units. And John, I'm going to leave it there but for time, but please call us again. He brings up the case. We're going to do a separate segment on the evidence in the Officer Peter Liang Kai Gurley shooting after they rest. So tomorrow or the next day on the show, we plan to look at the evidence. I know you didn't want to comment too much on the evidence there here today, but that is another piece of the case, exactly what John raises, that the officer, at least it's been reported, was not only patrolling with his gun drawn, but with his finger on the trigger in that case, which, you know, John is using it to raise a question about the whole policy of individual discretion when there's no immediate threat to the officer as opposed to a more uniform policy.
Right. So John raises about nine incredibly important and frankly very complex questions, and I'll take as many of them as I can. Again, I'm not going to talk about the Gurley matter. I just don't think it's fair to the jury. But so let's just take this hypothetically. The NYPD trains and trains and trains and trains on their shoot policy, when to shoot, when not to shoot, how to handle the gun, where to keep your finger, etc. And it's a constant retraining. The other thing they do, which is actually quite good, and the data sustains this, is they do an extraordinarily vigorous impact, in fact, probably the most vigorous in the country, follow-up whenever an officer fires a shot. It's not just some local report that goes to the precinct. There are layers of review when an officer fires his gun. It's called the firearms discharge report. The net result of that is that we have seen NYPD officers shooting of civilians going down almost every single year. And that's very good news, and that's both in large cities and in small cities. The NYPD does better, meaning they shoot fewer people than almost any other city. That's not to say, though, that any shooting, any improper shooting, is acceptable. They're not, and the department has to keep training and has to keep investigating these. As to the conditions in the building, he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right.
The elevators.
If you put people in conditions that are, let's just call it what it is, inhumane, disrespectful, of course they're not going to respect the property. We owe it to these folks. These are our fellow citizens. We owe it to these folks to give them decent conditions to live in, certainly ask them to take care of it, but also be very responsive when dangerous conditions exist and when conditions like the front door is broken or the elevator is not working, to fix it. If the lights are out, fix it. If you live in a condo or co-op, trust me, it gets fixed right away. It should be fixed in the NYCHA housing projects. Right away, no. But within a week, yes, it can be done. So he's absolutely right. We've got to treat people with respect. In terms of the automatic expulsion policy, I think, Brian, it's for people that commit felonies. Maybe it's for all crimes. I'm not sure. I think you're going to start seeing I guess, a softening of that policy in the following way. The courts and the prosecutors and the police now are looking at more and more diversion. Depending on the level of offense you commit, mm-hmm. you may either be sent to the courts or to some sort of diversion program. I think you'll start seeing the same level analysis being done with people who are committed crimes and are subject to this expulsion policy. But one of the unknown crime conditions in this city is that we have scores of youth who are homeless, who are what's doing called couch surfing. They have no place to live. Often they've been kicked out of NYCHA housing. We need to find a place for them to live in the same way we need to find them a job or get them back in school. We need to think broadly and aggressively about how to help people not get into a life of crime or not commit new crimes if we want to achieve permanent reductions mm-hmm. in these crime rates. And what's great, Brian, is we can do it, but it's going to take a collective resource.
John, you want another quick word after that?
Well, again, all of these things are nicely said, but it ignores the fact that these conditions have existed in the projects for 50, 60 years, and they continue to exist. And the only time they get attention is when something like this happens. And once this phase, you all will go away, everything will go. In the pink houses now, they've erected scaffolding all along the walkways. Now you can't even see people walking along the walkways from the street. So you created a tunnel from the walkways into the building. That scaffolding might be there 5 years. So 5 years from now, somebody shoots somebody, we'll be here talking about the same thing. That's the tragedy of it. This is a game you're playing. That's the tragedy of it.
John, thank you very much. There was a de Blasio announcement, I think. Richard, tell me if you're familiar with it, to have a much quicker response time to repairs in NYCHA. They're trying to have a, and I don't remember exactly what the timeline was that they put on it. You said it should be like a week. And I think I heard something like that coming out of City Hall. Are you familiar with it?
So I know that they have put an enormous amount of money into repairs and overall environmental conditions, and they're trying to become much more efficient about it. I think they're almost, in a sense, if I may use a police term, comstatting, if there's such a verb, comstatting
yes.
how rapidly they respond to these conditions. And I'm sure the mayor's office or Leach NYCHA puts out reports about how they're accelerating the repair time. And I think, Brian, there's also something in the mayor's, what's called the MMR, the mayor's management report about this. And that information should get out there. I wish the press would do some stories about this so that tenants in these housing developments know what progress is being made and where more progress needs to be made, and also tell people how to call to get attention to these issues.
All right. The next time the mayor comes on the show, I'm going to ask him about this very specifically. I am. So Richard Aborn, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us about vertical patrols and the NYCHA stairwells in general. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Brian. Anytime.